Are you Invictus? Clint, are you Invictus? Are you Invictus?
What does it mean?
You know, when I started the Invictus Mind podcast, my goal was to unite a bunch of people who had a similar ideology or a similar characteristic traits. Invictus means unconquerable. It's an old Greek word for means unconquerable.
Unconquerable.
So, to be totally honest, it was a new concept to me. I had to Google it when you sent it to me. But yeah, I do my best.
Tell me about what the show, what is your audience looking for? Tell me.
This is your first time here. This is the number one program dedicated to helping individuals maximize their potential and truly become unconquerable. Here we have discussions about what it takes and what it means to experience and magnify political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
Yes, I would absolutely say that. I'm going to keep getting up, right? And I keep getting up and I keep pushing forward. And that's the type of mindset that you need to have.
I never lose hope. I never lose faith. My mindset has always been, if I want something, I don't give up.
So let me tell you what is the number one issue when it comes to being unconquerable.
Okay.
And the number one word you have to think about here is not intelligence, not savvy, not strength, none of those things. The number one thing is resilience.
You know I'm Invictus. Come on. All right. I'm Invictus AF.
Well, may I have an initiation question for my tribe?
Okay.
Are you Invictus?
I believe I am.
So yes, I agree. I am Invictus.
I totally agree, man. And I think that if there's anybody on this planet that's unconquerable, it's probably me. I am not the type to take orders, and I am definitely in a position that I can stand up for myself right now. So,
and I was like, no way! I know what that word means now.
yeah, man, very cool concept for a show.
You didn't ask me if I was Invictus.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Invictus Mind podcast. Once again, this is your host, Mike Corbell. This is a show where we talk about people overcoming personal challenges and adapting to uncontrollable things. Our world has become more and more difficult, and it's imperative for us to become Invictus and live that life of political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom. And if you are listening for the first time, I appreciate it. Feel free to go back and listen to some of our other episodes to see if you can get a true sense of what we're doing here. And if you're tuning to the program and telling me that you like the show and find that it provides value to you, that's the case, and I'm happy. Either way, please go ahead and leave me a review on your favorite player. We are on all the apps, including Apple and Podchaser. And please tell everyone what you think. Also, let me know what topics are your favorite so I can make a note and keep delivering them to you. I do appreciate if you would share this with three of your friends so we can grow and continue to entertain you. All right, on the program with me is a guest that I met on a Podmatch app. I really love this app because it really helps me find some interesting people to share their stories. So if you're a podcaster yourself or you want to be featured on a podcast, it's a great and easy way to sign up and just get connected. Plus, if you use my affiliate link, then not only can I continue to deliver some great episodes to you, but you'll be helping out the program as all the revenue I generate will go right back into the show. Well, today I'm talking to a man who himself has overcome his own challenges, and his story is really incredible. After losing everything, he has spent the last 15 years rebuilding his relationship with God and his professional reputation. He is the author of a book entitled Exposed: Secret Emails, Lies, Divorce, and a Journey to Restoration. He is the youngest of three pastors' children. He has served as a youth minister, music director, and associate pastor. On top of that, he is now helping young men make a transition in their lives, moving from incarceration into returning to society. His story proves that no matter how off course our lives go, we can still find a way back to God, and he'll love and forgive us. Joining me today is Michael Chestnut. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show today. It's an honor to be here to share my story.
Well, I appreciate it. And I'm going to let you get into the details of your story. I was intrigued by the little video that you put up there. And so I didn't want to spoil for everybody, but obviously your story tells a story, but not only redemption, but some of the things that life can get us into that can be very troubling or dangerous even.
Correct. So. And a lot of times we don't even know that we have underlying trauma that not dealt with can really cause serious situations for you in your future, especially with your personal identity.
Yeah. So the video I'm referring to was you were in your car and you were suddenly pulled over by two unmarked police cars, and a detective and an FBI agent walked up to you. And that's where it starts. Maybe you can fulfill us like as if you were telling the story for the first time.
Yes. So, you know, it was actually at my house, and they pulled up, and, you know, last thing in the world that I ever thought, you know, something like you see in a movie, right? And so I just was kind of taken off guard. What's going on? All this stuff. And they asked me a bunch of questions, just really strange questions. But I obviously knew now where they were heading and where they were going to, although what they were there for was totally false and not accurate at all. What brought them there was about to expose a whole world of my secrets, right? So this took place back in the early 2000s, you know, right when the internet first started coming out.
Sure.
And I was in a relationship. I was married. I was a minister, associate pastor at the time. And it started off easy. I mean, simple and innocent, right? I went to the computer one night and just to check my emails. And there was a email actually from someone who I knew their first name. And I thought it was that person. But when I opened it up, it was pornography. And you know, it's not a sin to be tempted, right? It's what we do with the temptation that brings us in. And I wish that in that moment I would have closed that, but I didn't. And that one simple email started me on a spiraling journey downward.
Okay.
And you know, back in the early 2000s, pornography was not something easily to come about, let's say, okay? Because before the internet, if you were going to go look at pornography, you had to go to maybe the video store, and you had to walk behind that curtain that said adults only, and then you had to come out with the box or the number of what you want and go up to some teenage girl who's like, did you find everything you want? And so most men didn't do that. You might have thought, look behind the curtain, you know, whatever, but that was how hard it was to get pornography. But now the internet has come and it's opened up a whole new world. But when it first came out, it wasn't free either. You know, today, I mean, you just Google whatever you want and it's right there, right? But that wasn't the case back then. But what was the case was online chat rooms. And in those chat rooms, you would start conversations with other people who would trade pornography. And so that's where that came to. And for me, what happened was for some reason, I was captivated by it. And the more that I was captivated by it, the more I was in secret with it, the worse it became, right? And I thought, you know, you always hear people say, well, boys are going to be boys, right? They're going to be boys. What we fail to want to realize is the damage that pornography does to young boys today. We have boys as young as 7 years of age today who see pornography for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have boys as early as 13 who are chronically involved with pornography on their smartphone. And what used to be it was hard to get, now you can do in the secrecy. Not just of your home now, your car, anywhere you're at, you know, because it's so readily available.
Anywhere where you have a device that receives internet, right?
Correct. And a lot of people don't realize the damage that it can do. Well, boys will be boys, yes. Is our carnal nature, our Curious, yes, of course it is, right? But pornography opens so many things to us that causes us to have false reality of relationships. And with me, the further I got into it, now it's the type of pornography I'm looking at. And I don't know why I'm attracted to this pornography, but now it's captivating me, right? And when the FBI came to my door, someone had gotten in trouble and in one of those chat rooms and wanted to give out a bunch of our names or our email address, and they tracked us down. This guy had actually got on a plane, flew to Florida to have sex with an undercover cop's disabled daughter out of all things, right? And the scary part about this guy was he lived in my community. Now, see, all this time I'm talking to people online and I'm thinking they're far away. They're in California, in New York or whatever. Little did we realize that some of these guys on here are predators and stalkers, and this is what they do. And he had said that I had solicited my daughter to him. Now, first, let me tell you, that's not true. Okay. Never happened. But here's the thing. I opened myself up to the accusation because I was looking at pornography. I had a cloak of shame, and to everybody, they see that shame and they're like, what was he into? And I was scared to let people know. To make a short story long here with it is, I was being more attracted to same-sex pornography. And that's what my shame was. That's what my guilt was, because here I was in leadership. Now, by this time, I did step down. I wasn't a pastor anymore because nobody knew about this secret, but I did. I felt like a hypocrite. I couldn't focus there anymore. This sin had gotten over me, right? But what the reason why it is so, pornography and sin in general, but pornography, it's usually meeting a need, and we think it's sexual because pornography is sexual in nature, right? So we think it's meeting a need, but the truth is it's rarely probably sexual that the need that you're trying to meet is. Most of the time it's trying to find to cover a void that's in your life, or to cover up maybe missed trauma in your life. So for me, being the youngest of a pastor's kid, something I never dealt with in my life was I was molested by a missionary when I was young. Never dealt with it. In fact, never told anyone. No one in my family knew about that until I wrote my book. And that's when my family members found out about it. I blocked that out of my mind. And as you read my book, you'll see I had a lot of dysfunctions as a kid. You know, being a pastor's kid is not the easiest thing in the world to be.
Sure.
And especially in the circle in which I was in. And one of the things that we were taught as preacher's kids was we had this innate desire to please everybody in the church. What that really caused was not to be authentic. And we learned to be what everybody needed us to be rather than to be who we really were or who Christ was making us to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was a pastor, I was young, and there was a pastor who fell into sin, had an affair with a lady in his church. Now this, to put this in concept, this man was like an uncle to me. This man was someone who was very close to our family, and it was devastating. And my heart as a young person, now you have to understand that why this is taking place, this is shortly after my molestation had taken place.
Okay.
And my dad gets a phone call, and how I found out about this man, what happened to this man, was another pastor calling my dad, and his words were, well, bless God, now another bad minister gone. Mm. In that moment, that confirmed everything I knew, that I can never tell anyone my story.
And sure.
No one would ever accept me. I also dealt with some learning disabilities and felt like a stupid child. And that I explained that in my book. And you take this perfect storm of things that happened. And what happened was it was just a matter of a bunch of dysfunctional things. So I never dealt with the trauma of being molested. And then on top of that, I was molested by a missionary. You know, we had a missionary apartment in our basement at the house, and the molestation took place right under the nose of my family, because my family was so trusting. And, you know, and back then too, we didn't know a lot about sexual abuse with kids. We didn't know you look back now and you see, I had all the signs. I had all the symptoms. Anybody today would have probably picked up on that. But back then they didn't have that. And, you know, I had a little bit of bitterness for that, because I wish someone would have seen that. But, it, you know, that's just how it was back in the 70s and everything. So you jump forward. Whenever you have a lot of people who are sexually assaulted when they're kids, have a skewed idea of relationships and what relationships are. Mm-hmm. So in my life, I had nothing but failed relationships, because what I was gauging them off of was something that was not, first off, godly, not how God intended to be. And I didn't know how to process. I never processed trauma. I never knew how to process what happened to me. So now, am I gay? You know, as a young kid, that was the biggest thing. Am I gay? Because let me tell you, if I was gay, I was going to be disowned by everybody, you know? And then when that preacher made that phone call, I surely couldn't say anything, correct? So it was just all the stuff happened. So then when this pornography came to me later on in my life, it's like Pandora's box opened.
Yeah, yeah.
And in no way, as I'm telling you my story, do I ever want you to think that I'm making an excuse for bad behavior and for the things that I chose to do. Because what happened was, I started getting in these chat rooms. Next thing you know, I met a lady. And I, you know, well, I went to meet a lady. It ended up, she wasn't there. Ended up, it was a scam, whatever. Later on, I finally went to a massage parlor. And that's when the first affair happened. Mm. I don't want to get too much into my marriage, because it's not fair to her. And yes, we had problems, but this story is not about what she was lacking. It's about what I was lacking.
Sure, right? Sure. Yeah, and I appreciate you starting to share this story. I've had a couple, I guess, on recent episodes. One is a certified nurse practitioner whose job was actually to help people such as yourself and everybody else who has had a problem, particularly with addictions and pornography. And then I spoke to a pastor's wife just recently. By the time the listeners listen to this program, that'll be released already. But she has a story of abuse and has been able to make a redemption. So, you know, despite everyone's background, you know, as horrific as it can be, we can place blame for everybody, or, you know, we can take responsibility. But these are real stories. And I really like, you know, the fact that we can admit the fact that we've gotten in trouble or we've made bad decisions, and we can continue to move forward. I want to hone in more about this FBI story, though. So obviously they came to your house. They made you sign some papers saying that they were going to record you. Did they have a warrant for you already, or was it?
No. And, you know, and I didn't know my rights or anything at that. And in fact, it didn't matter. But when they came in, let me tell you, it's just like a Law and Order special or something like that. When you look back on it, and I'm going to tell you, the fear is so real.
Sure.
The fear is so real. I mean, first off, who thinks that an FBI agent is going to show you that badge and they're there to talk to you about risky behavior you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Then on top of it, what they're accusing you of is something that you're like, what? You know, that's just so blown away. But then the problem is you have this other secret world that's going on, which is the root of why they're really here, because I put myself in that place. And so I was so afraid that they were going to find out and that they were going to expose me to everybody. Because what people don't know, as you read my book, you're going to find out that the night before they came, I crossed yet another line. And see, that's what pornography does. You're crossing lines. You're crossing lines. You say, and I think any sins like that, drug addicts will say the same thing, alcoholics, other people, I won't do this. I'll do this, but I won't do this.
Right.
And, but when you don't deal with unresolved trauma and you're feeding the addiction, you can pretty much do anything. You will cross lines. And the night before they came, I crossed the line and I went to a male masseur and had a sexual relationship that night before they came.
Okay.
The shame and the guilt from that now is tremendous. And in my warped thinking and in my fearful thinking, when the FBI came, I thought they were there for that. That's what I thought they were there for. And now everyone's going to know. Everyone's going to know who I am, what I'm battling, and the panic that was over me. The FBI, I let them do a scan. They had a special program. They did a scan on my computer. There was no child pornography. It was not into child pornography, which is what they were coming to look for.
That's what they accused you of, though, right?
That's what they didn't accuse me of child pornography. They accused me of this guy who it is someone who I had chatted with.
Okay.
Online.
He said he accused you
for it. And so him to get a, so for him to get, try to get his, to get a plea deal and knock his time down, he's giving out names to everybody. Go visit these people.
I see.
Hoping they're casting a net. Basically.
Okay. So essentially it was something that you didn't do. You were connected to this guy, but what they were there for was not something you were guilty of, despite the fact that you had guilt for a similar thing, but not the actual crime that they were trying to get you for.
Right. I had done nothing criminal.
Okay.
But they were casting out a net. I wasn't the only people. Anyone who had been in this chat room with this individual, I'm got a visit from them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, but that, you know, now I was fears with me. That day I grabbed a bottle of pills as soon as they left. And I was ready to end my life. I was ready to end my life.
Sure.
And my pastor at the time, I called him and, I couldn't release, I still couldn't tell him what, everything that, but he knew enough and he did get me help, you know, but as time went on, because now this is, the FBI is investigating me, I had secured an attorney to make sure that I'm, you know, I have to protect myself. And the attorney said, don't talk to anybody about anything. Well, how am I going to get help now?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
So now I'm in the hospital. wanting to kill myself over the stuff that's happening, but I can't communicate to anybody about what's going on with me. And that's how the enemy works. The enemy wants to paralyze us in our addiction and keep us, because the moment we shed light on it is when we can start finding freedom. So his job is to keep light from shining on us. And he had a great hold of me. And I'm going to tell you the guilt I had, because I'm also not, I understand, I'm still living in darkness. I'm not comparing, I'm not relating that this attraction that I'm having for these same-sex pornography is coming from a sexual abuse that happened to me as a child.
I'm
still not connecting these dots. And in fact, I'm not even, I haven't thought about that in years, you know? So I'm not, I have not connected these dots yet. Needless to say, my whole world fell apart. Just shattered. I lost my marriage. I lost my relationship with my daughter. To this day, she's in her 20s. I have not got to talk to her. And not because any of this stuff was true, but I brought the FBI to our house. I don't.
And that can be traumatic for anybody, for any reason, right?
It was traumatic to me.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how betrayed my wife felt when the FBI approached her about her husband. You know, I just can't. So I can't throw no blame at her. No blame. She, her job was to protect our child. That was her job. And, you know, how can she believe me when she sees the other things that I have done now? Right. And not everybody knows this, but she's picking. I know she saw enough pieces to put that together.
Yeah, sure.
And so I spent literally the next probably 8 months in and out of hospitals in five different states, tried three separate times to kill myself, running from God, running from everybody out of fear of being exposed and telling no one my secret. And I remember a good pastor friend of mine brought me to Branson, Missouri, and on a bus. And I got off the bus and he was like, Mike, you got to talk. You have to open up to someone. And he told me, there's nothing you can say that's going to jade me about you, you know, but until you take care of it. And he asked me a question. He said, Mike, how do you think God sees you? And in that moment, where I put my head down and I was like a horrible person. And he was like, no, Mike, that's not how God sees you. But that one question that he said to me, I wanted to know the answer. I wanted to believe that God loved me. I wanted to believe that God forgave me, but I couldn't forgive myself. So that question has stayed with me all the way through to the point where I finally did find restoration. It took me 15 years. Let me tell you, there's not a quick fix to this.
Sure, sure.
You know, and so.
So, Michael, I want to relate your story to something that I've experienced. I mean, not personally, but I remember I was working a corporate job. This was probably 15 years ago itself. And there was a whole bunch of people working there. The building probably had 500 people. We were desk jockeys just working at a call center. And all of a sudden, the police come in and raid the building, and everyone has to kind of get out. And they took this guy's laptop from the place we worked. And then everyone was like, what the heck's going on? And it wasn't until the next day that we found out that this guy who worked with us, who was sitting among us, who seemed like a pretty decent guy, he was arrested the night before for child pornography. We read it in the paper. He read it, you know, they raided his house and everything like that. And then they came and they wanted to take all his stuff from war. I mean, he obviously lost his job. We never saw him again. And I don't even know what the outcome of that story was. But I mean, this is something that affects people everywhere on a regular basis. But so when the FBI came and ultimately they started questioning you, I mean, was there a lawsuit that they had to go through? Did you have, or it was just they were there and they didn't find what they were looking for and they left you alone? How did that go down?
The FBI only I had one interview with the FBI that day.
And that
once
was it?
They did their scan and all that, they knew that I was not involved in any of this.
Okay.
So I only had one bout with them. But what happened was they had the vice police from Indianapolis were there. And so they really wanted my computer because they wanted to know who else was in the chat rooms.
Okay.
And all that. And, you know, they also had a job to look out for their community. Correct. So I can't even be mad at the vice cops who did their jobs. I wanted to. And for a while I was.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, the truth is they did their job. But they once they took my computer, I never spoke to them again either, because there was nothing on there, you know, that I was doing. Was there a lot of immoral things on there? Yes, but nothing illegal.
Sure, sure. So, I mean, obviously you suffered some damaging to your reputation. Your personal life was destroyed.
Because when your family and daughter, your laptop, your neighbors see the FBI there.
Sure.
That's all they need to make you guilty.
Okay.
You know, that's, it just takes an accusation to ruin you. It doesn't even have to be true, but just because they're there for a reason, right? And they were there for a reason. I was in the world of pornography. And what happened was I was communicating with people who were not outstanding people, who were themselves probably involved in this, at least one I know of for sure.
Sure.
You know, so, but immediately my reputation was crushed.
Did you have to move from your neighborhood, or did you relocate everything, or did you just have
to? I eventually relocated from Indianapolis to Florida.
Yeah.
But a lot of that was because the trauma was so big. I can't even tell you the trauma that, I mean, I really, for a solid year and a half, I just wanted to die.
Mm.
I had no desire to live because, you know, I woke up one day and realized that I was a fake and I was not anything of the man I wanted to be, you know, and I couldn't forgive myself, you know, so I can't explain it to you, but then the cloak of depression that is over you. And I came from a legalistic world.
Okay.
So there was nowhere safe to talk to anybody about this until I got to Florida. Once I got to Florida, God brought some great people into my life. And it took some time to find that restoration.
Sure, sure. And that's what I want to focus on here, because I mean, every single individual goes through a dark stage, and I'm not saying everyone has the same situation or same story as you, but somehow, some way, I really believe that everyone goes to the darkest part of the world and they get themselves into something that they feel like there's no place to get out of, you know. You know, after your story, obviously it did traumatic things to yourself, to your family. You felt guilty and shame. But then you said that you met some people in Florida. How did that go down? Was it through a church organization? Was it just from somebody you met online? How did that go down?
It's so amazing how God works, because I have people in my life that there were moments that only God could ordain. Mm. And as soon as I got off the plane, my sister, who's dating a guy that she only dated for a little bit, knew a guy whose brother was a pastor.
Mm, okay.
And that guy went to his brother, who's the pastor, and said, how do you help someone who is lost everything and needs to be restored? And, you know, he was going to him stating, you know, hoping there was is there a program we can get him into? Is there this or that? And his name was Michael Collins. And Michael Collins said, well, restoration only comes through Christ and relationships. He has to have healthy relationships that will help him walk that journey. Mm-hmm. And he told him, well, he's burnt every bridge, because I did. And Michael Collins said, I'll meet with him. And this guy, the day I got off the plane, And when I moved here to Florida, because that's where my parents were, it was okay. The last place I wanted to go because I was full of shame. I couldn't look anybody in the eye. I get off the plane. This guy meets me at my parents, takes me to Wendy's, and we started a friendship. And I broke down and told him my story. And he walked this journey with me. Even after I betrayed him, he still walked this journey with me. You know, and it's an incredible story of how God brings the right people. But then I got a counselor. And then I started SA, Sexaholics Anonymous. And I had three people in my life who didn't know each other at all, but all said the same thing, which was God talking, you know, which made it to me that this is God. God is walking this journey with you, but it was a long journey. It was a long, long journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you mentioned it, it's taking you 15 years. You know, obviously accepting God's grace for what it is and bringing you down a path and everything like that. And were you able to put your life back together to a place that, you know?
Yeah. What happened was, as a child growing up, I told you about that pastor called, I never saw a model for me, someone restored.
Okay.
I never saw someone someone who maybe drank beer and got redemption over that. But no one in what I have committed, what I have done, did I ever see anyone ever restored. In fact, I saw the opposite. I saw them condemned, ridiculed, and cast away. And so my whole life, I felt up to this point now, I'm feeling like a throwaway person.
Yeah, yeah.
And truth is, I was throwing myself away because my best friend was shame and guilt. And as a pastor's kid, I think I learned how to do that very well, but also through the abuse that happened. And long story short, during Hurricane Sally, which happened 2 years ago, a tree went through the roof of our house. And I remember during COVID, I was praying. I prayed to God. I said, God, I really want to know that you love me. I really want, because I kept going back to what that my friend Ted said. How does God see you? And I really want to know that. So during COVID, I was off work and I was praying, God, I really want to know. I was still living in shame and guilt, still afraid I'm going to be exposed for what happened to me 15 years ago, still. And we were on our way back with tarps to put over our roof of our house where the damage was. And a sewage truck ran over the top of me and my wife, our car, crushed our car. God moved my car just at the right moment or I would have died.
Wow.
I could go like this and touch the tanker. It was in my back seat. People couldn't believe we survived. We lived through it. But a lot of trauma came out of that wreck. And I had a lot of PTSD. In fact, to this day, it's still a little hard for me to drive and stuff because of what took place with that. But how God takes the bad moments in our lives and turn them around is so tremendous. Because what happened, I went to a counselor for my PTSD on this. So I have, she's a Christian and she could see past the PTSD too. And she was seeing all this other stuff of how I viewed myself.
Okay.
And how I was living. And she was like, we need to get to the root causes of this. And then she asked me, Mike, how do you think God sees you? And again, my head goes down, a horrible person. For the next 2 years, me and her walked a journey together. And even with my church, so I'm at a new church. I'm out of that circle of churches that I used to be with. I'm going to it was a non-denominational church. And the love me and my wife received from the people there. The counselor, every day, every time I went to her, it was like revival. And I remember the moment that she said, Mike, have you asked God to forgive you? And I remember the first time that I told her, she was the first person I told
about your previous life
as a child.
Okay.
First person I told. And it just vomited out of me. And then all of a sudden we started working these pieces. And then I told her about what happened with the same-sex pornography that I had viewed. And then the experience with the masseur. And what was so great was, one, she showed me the love and grace of God as I talked with her about this. And she showed me God's love and forgiveness, that it even applied to me at my worst moments in my life. But then she helped me connect the dots of how what happened to me as a child created a journey for me that without ever dealing with it, she's like, you didn't know what a normal relationship was. Your idea of sexuality is skewed now because of what this man did to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was repeatedly over and over, you know? So she's like, yeah, you're a man now, you know, it's wrong, but you still are, your thinking is wrong.
Yeah, there's disconnects.
There is. And I remember the day sitting in her office when I felt, so let me tell you this, every day of my life since I was a young kid, I can't remember a day not waking up saying I hate myself. Could never think of a day. That day, in her office, I had time with God. And I laid all that at God's feet, asked forgiveness, put everything, dealt with what we dealt with, the childhood stuff, all the stuff, I put it there, the self-loathing that I had and everything. And after I prayed and I gave it to God, she said something very, very powerful to me. Because I am someone who's really, you know, a lot of times we give something to God, but then we pick it up and take it, right?
You're still holding on to it, yeah.
And then we take it back because we're not worthy enough. And she was like, you know, you feel like you need to be punished. So therefore you're doing God's job and you keep punishing yourself. So that day after I finally just had that come to Jesus moment and gave it to God, she said, Mike, so at this moment, remember this day and this time, and she said, let's start with you first. Let's never allow yourself or anybody else ever to pick back up what God has removed from you.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And that was life-changing. And you know what? From that day, I've not picked it back up. And from that day, that was the day I found redemption and restoration began in my life. That's when that started happening. And there's not been a day that I woke up and said, I hate myself today.
That's amazing. Today,
when somebody asks me, how do you think God sees you? I can honestly say God loves me. God's forgiven me and God has a plan for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been able to do that. And so the power of restoration, the freedom that you can get from restoration, it's amazing. And yes, I regret everything that I did as an adult. I made choices that were wrong. And I fell into pornography that was wrong. But the amazing thing is I serve a God who, before he created me, he knew what was going to happen to my life. And God had a plan and God restored me. And now today I'm in a group where I help other men who are going through the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's such a joy to be able to go, because I look at some of them and I see the shame and guilt on them. And I'm like, you don't have to live with that. And, you know, I remember my I just share my story with them. And then I'm just walking this journey with them now and being able to do it. I still have an accountability partner. I still know that I can't fool myself that tomorrow I couldn't be back where I was. You know, I still guard myself because the enemy's throwing temper tantrums now.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
Now yeah. I'm doing something for the kingdom of God, whereas before he had me in darkness. That's where that light, once I the day that I told her about the sexual abuse, light came in. And then when I told her about the pornography I was watching, God just blew the whole place open with light. And all those things I was afraid that people would think were removed.
Let me ask you this, Michael, because obviously the thing that happened 15 years ago and you you know, you said that you went through a divorce and you had to leave your community, but then you were remarried. But you didn't tell your second wife about the story until after the near-death experience. And the
she knew, my wife okay. knew that, and my, you gotta understand. So misery loves company, right? So me and my wife both were not my current wife were not living for God when we came together.
Okay.
I was far from God. So was she, but since that time, she's come to accept Christ as her savior. And now that I'm healed and I found freedom, what's amazing is my family. I'm seeing a change in my family. I never thought I could be that leader for my family. And now I'm watching my wife. I'm so proud of her. She's someone who couldn't pray. Now I hear her on the phone praying with other women. I'm like, who is that? You know? So it's amazing because what I feared was the opposite. And my family is thriving now.
Okay.
I was willing to face the darkness.
Sure, sure. And you felt the redemption power and that love of God. And, you know, you feel like you're a new person now. You feel revived. And now you've begun helping, you know, men. Are you part of a parish right now, part of a church program that does this?
Yeah. Well, yes, I'm involved at my church greatly. And then this is, it's called Freedom Fighters. We're located in Pensacola, and so it's a group of men who have battled pornography, and I think there's roughly about 20 guys in this group, you know, and we meet every Thursday at a local church here, and we keep each other accountable, and we're walking this journey with each other, because, you know, the thing is, nobody has to walk this alone.
And so, now, I mean, obviously, I don't want to get too deeply personal here, but obviously you shared a lot already. How does your story affect other men? Is it more about the redemptive power that you share with them, or more about, you know, I walk this journey with you. I understand where you come from. Do you still feel that people are kind of leery about, you know, your background, or do they feel like, okay, I can trust this guy again?
Yeah, no, the day I sent my book out, so I wrote my book, I called it Exposed, and because my biggest fear was being exposed. So God said, well, we're going to take care of that. We're going to expose you. I'm going to expose you, and you're going to write a book. I wrote my book in 2 months, and I didn't want to write a book. I fought with God about that, you know, because who wants to share your worst moments in your life? But I was allowing the worst moments in my life to define who I was, right? Yeah. So now, what I found in sharing my story, how many other people can relate in today's world? You know, back in the early 2000s, internet was brand new when all this stuff started happening to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have guys today who we have people in our pulpits who are addicted to porn with no hope of restoration over this. And I'm hoping that God will use my story to show them that, yeah, God's powerful enough to heal you from what's happening to you. And you don't have to do this alone.
Yes. Yeah.
And so what I'm finding out, people are I can't tell you the emails I get, the letters I get, the people I get who have come up. I've just met with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago who just, because he read my book, felt comfortable to come to me now. he's like, I need it. So now he's in counseling today, you know, seeing the counselor that I went to see.
Yeah.
You know, that's to me, if nothing else, what's happening with him made my journey well worth it. Mm.
Yeah. You know, so I love stories like this because, you know, I, as a believer, I do believe that every single one of us has some kind of value within us, you know, despite the decisions we make, despite the behaviors, the snares of the devil and the awful path that humanity can bring someone down. I really believe that, you know, if we trust in the Almighty, then he will redeem us. He will come. Yes. We're able to see the light at the end of the tunnel and know that, you know, at that moment when we receive that blessing, that, and we continue to focus on things that are from on high,
right,
you know, our lives can be dramatically different, no matter where we came from in the back. You right. know, I've spoken to people all different types of walks of life, and you know, it strengthens my testimony that there is a Savior. So I appreciate that story. You know, I call this program the Invictus Mind. And you know, if you've listened to my show, you know, I've had all kinds of discussions from politics to financial stuff to spirituality. And, you know, I haven't had somebody tell me a story such as yours, but I do appreciate it because I think that somewhere out there within the sound of hearing this will probably say, you know what, if he can find light, then so can I.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I believe it.
And you just want it. A guy told me one time, when does a man want change? And I was like, when he hits rock bottom, when he's had enough, whatever. He said, no, a man's only ready for change when he's ready and not a moment sooner.
Yeah.
And that's the question we have to ask ourselves if we're living in some sort of darkness. Are you ready for change? And if you are, God is waiting to help you with that. You just have to be willing and wanting it.
All right, great. Well, I mean, it sounds like you've definitely turned your life around. It sounds like you're doing now the good work of helping others who have either a similar story or come from dark places themselves, and that's a good thing. I see the book is sitting next to you that you've written.
It is. It's called Exposure. You can get it on Amazon. You can go to intentionalguy.com. That's my website where I'm at, and you can order the book from there. It's not expensive. It's on Audible as well. So if you're on the Audible Club, you can go there and get it. The person who narrates it, I cry every time I hear the guy narrate it. The narrator is so good with it. But it's also on Kindle. Any which way you like to read a book, it's available for you.
Perfect. Well, I thank you for that. So I'm going to ask you the question I ask a lot of my guests. And I don't know if I prepared you this for not, or if you even know what the word means. But Michael, do you feel like you're Invictus?
I don't even know if I know what that word means fully. So
fair enough. So, okay. Let me explain it. So Invictus means unconquerable. Okay. Which means that in many cases, you know, even despite the fact that we can be hit with all kinds of travesties and make horrible decisions, we can enslave ourselves, that through the power of God and our desire and our willpower, that we can escape from that kind of slavery and truly live a life that will free us from that bondage.
Oh, definitely. A few years ago, I would have said no. Today, a hard yes, because the power of God in my life, I'm in awe of who God is today. And there's nothing that comes at me or my family that I know God can't take care of, and God will.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate the time, Michael, sharing your story with us. And I definitely wish you the best of luck. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, you've already mentioned some places. So last parting words of advice or anything like that?
No, I want to thank you for letting me come on here and share my story. I hope it's brought some line of hope for some of your guys, your people who are listening, and that, you know, that it goes right along with what you're saying. I mean, with God, you know, there's hope. There really is hope.
I believe it. Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. And so I wish you the best of luck. Okay.
Thank you.